at that time to bestow the mellows of Vrindavan, which alone can truly conquer the demons with the essence of my love. And then he added a very specific prediction. To those who try to flee the inundation overflowing from my love, hiding in other countries, to them I will send more Senapati Bhakta, which means the field commander of all my devotees, and he will rescue them. That same theme was elaborated further towards the end of Krishna's Leela in Dwarka, when Ganga Devi approached him on behalf of all the holy rivers she represented and confided in Krishna that, my Lord, seeing the approaching darkness indicates that the duration of your Leela is coming to a close. She understood that after Krishna, the very source of undulating mercy, which expanded that ocean of love of the Brijavasis, in which Krishna himself appeared, after inundating Bharadvarsha with waves of mercy and wonder, consuming the world with bhakti, Ganga Devi could see that now Dwarka is on the verge of slipping down into the ocean. Understanding that Krishna's Leela was coming quickly to a close, and seeing, as did the Dwarkavasis and Yadus, that people were becoming more materialistic, fearful to see the omens of Kali Yuga increasing, on behalf of the sacred rivers, Ganga Devi appealed to Lord Krishna, "Let me go underground now, as Saraswati has already done." Because in the depth of Kali Yuga darkness, Srila Prabhupada commented upon this in a darshan in New Vrindavan, there's one element of Vedic culture that people adhere to the end, and that is you go to a distant holy place and take bath in the holy waters there. And he commented that I live in Calcutta, the Ganges flows right through town, but people have to go to Hardwar to take a bath and come back. But they don't hear from the holy sadhus residing in those places. So it's nearly meaningless on the one hand, but Ganga Devi was fearful. The people will give up all religious practices. They'll become atheistic by nature, inimical, and especially prone to blaspheme saintly souls, which is the primary offense to the holy name. And then they'll come and bathe in our waters, and we'll become overpolluted by the sinful reactions, which will nullify our service to you in this world. That was her line of reason, concluding in the request that, as Saraswati has already done, may the rest of us go underground, and we'll come up again when Satyuga dawns. And Krishna said, what we all don't like to hear, be patient. Because in a mere 5,000 years, now look at your timetable. 4,500 years would have been the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Lord Krishna did not give that schedule. He said, in 5,000 years, I will send my mantra upasaka, the devotee who worships my maha mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He will expand the Sankirtan movement to, as we heard this morning, weave a garland of the holy name intertwined with prema, which will encompass the whole universe. And under his influence, everyone, everywhere will take to the chanting of Hare Krishna. The whole world will be united in Ekavarna, one class, one designation. Krishna Bhakta. And by the effect of the confidential truths contained in that hymn, most sacred hymn of Goloka, the recruits that my mantra upasaka gathers in distant lands, including the Western world, will come on pilgrimage to Bharatvarsha, and when they bathe in your holy waters, they will counteract the sinful reactions and purify your current. And this is an opportunity you must not miss to render that service. His coming marks the dawning of a golden age of unprecedented goodness, surpassing that which is found in Satyayuga, which is why the demigods in heaven, the residents of other ages, including Satyayuga, they pray and wait and desire to take birth, not in an ordinary Kali Yuga, but in the one rare special in 1,000 Kali Yugas, when it's not Gaur Narayan who comes as the golden avatar, but the unique, wonderful, combined form of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. So he told Ganga Devi, stay for 10,000 years. No, it'd be 15,000. 5,000 till he comes, the remaining 10,000 of the golden age, after which time the full force of Kali Yuga will overtake the world. And in that period, Govardhan will continue shrinking into the surface of the earth. Devotees will go underground, and you too can join Saraswati to flow underground until the next Satyayuga comes. Take shelter under the earth. That is related to the experience King Bhagirath had when he was leading the Ganges across the face of Bharatvarsha, riding on his chariot, blowing a conch shell, hearing the roar of Ganga following him as he led her to the site where he desired that she deliver his ancestors. Somewhere along the journey, he heard the roaring of her current fading into the background, and he stopped his chariot and looked, and she was standing still. He retraced his steps and fell on the ground before her and prayed, whatever I've done to check your flow, please forgive me. But please continue onward to deliver my ancestors who otherwise will have no hope. And she told him, my dear son, I have descended and come to fulfill your prayer. But you must know that I have one request as well. We have now reached the land of Navadvip Dham, and Gaur Purnim is quickly approaching. Stay here with me to worship my Lord on the day of his appearance in Nam Sankirtan. And then, after that, I will joyfully go wherever you like to fulfill all your desires. That site is Ganga Nagar, where Mahaprabhu performed many of his wonderful pastimes. Today we are worshiping that Lord on his appearance by Nam Sankirtan. What does Sankirtan mean? Lord Gauranga as a pundit was very fond of tracing out verbal roots. Of course, everything meant Krishna, and when his students, who really wanted an academic degree rather than to hear only about Krishna, they asked, how can every root, every verb, every syllable, every everything mean only Krishna? So they tried to trick him. What is the explanation and definition of dhatu, verbal root? And he was trying, according to the instructions of Gangadas Pandit, to again behave as a professor. After all his rational intellect just dissolved into devotional ecstasy, you know, the students, when Gangadas Pandit, he requested him, look, you know, bhakti is good, but your ancestors were all pandits. That helps bhakti. So just, these students are dependent on you. They won't go elsewhere. Please continue your teaching of Vyakarana. So he was trying to teach. And they were trying to keep him on a secular path by asking appropriate questions. What is the meaning of dhatu, of verbal root? And immediately, it is the energy of Krishna. Because verbal root means vibration from the ether, which articulates in the form of sound and become words which we form, communicate. So that vibration is the potency of Krishna. And he gave so many analogies to understand that without the potency of Krishna, everything is simply dead, dull. And therefore, Chaitanya means life. Chaitanya Charitamrita means the character of that life force and immortality, and how we can become part of it even during our conditional existence. So the root of Sankirtan, Samyak, means complete, whole, holding nothing back. The standard of praise and worship appropriate only for the avatari. Not so much for the avatars, not for the expansions of Godhead, what to speak of the demigods. Sankirtan, complete praise, worship, is appropriate in service of the most complete form of Godhead. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahayanya Balaram Holanitai. Philosophically speaking, both Krishna and his holy name are absolute and non-different. From the perspective of mercy, there is a difference. The holy name excels over Krishna in the quality of mercy. Along the same train of reasoning, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu excels over Krishna in terms of mercy. How is that? Kaviraj Goswami elaborates on Sri Krishna's afterthoughts following his Vrindavan Leela, which left him feeling incomplete. I desire to bestow prema bhakti upon this world, without which the whole creation is meaningless. And then he goes, Kaviraj Goswami goes through the whole train of Krishna's thoughts, but we'll focus on one in this regard. Krishna made a promise, which holds true forever, that as we approach him, according to the intention with which we surrender to him, he reciprocates accordingly. That promise was broken by the gopis, to whom Krishna himself confessed, I'm unable to repay you for your super excellent love. Let your own glorious deeds of devotional service remain your only compensation. But Krishna's a gentleman. He's not one to remain an indebtor, a debtor forever and not make every effort to compensate. Krishna could not reciprocate. But in Chaitanya Leela, he more than fully reciprocated. What does this mean? Compare the love of Krishna to that of Radha and her associates. Krishna's love, albeit to varying degrees, is distributed and dispersed and extended to all creation, all beings in creation. Different from the gopis' love, which is focused exclusively upon Krishna to the extent of their own degree of devotion characterized by self-forgetfulness. Material world is selfish. Vaikuntha is selfless service. Vrindavan is self-forgetfulness. When Radha and Krishna combine, due to Krishna's wanting to relish some particular flavor characteristic of her rasa, wanting to understand some particular aspect of himself that he can't see in the mirror, except through the eyes of Srimati Radharani, and taking upon himself her internal sentiments, disguised by the aura of her love, which is golden, that inclusive love of Krishna, exclusive love of Radha, source of Madhurya, combine in a crystallized essence which radiates another flavor of ras called Odarya, which is unlimited, unrestricted, indiscriminate in touching the hearts of anyone who simply accepts the gift of Lord Gauranga. So in his own Leela, following the footsteps of the gopis, undergoing all the trials and tribulation of family obstacles, social resistance, and all culminating in the emotional ordeal of suffering the anguish of separation from Krishna, all to reveal that, you know, why was Krishna sending a message through Uddhava to tell the gopis to meditate on him? They responded that, you know, this doesn't please us or satisfy, it makes us more angry with you. We're not like yogis who want to see you, we want to forget you, Krishna. And then when he met them at Kurukshetra, he himself impressed upon them the same message. Along with a deeper realization of the esoteric aspect of that instruction meant for the gopis and all those who would follow. That through meditating on Krishna in Astanga Yoga, the jnanis perceive the Brahma Jyoti. The yogis perceive the super soul within the heart. And the gopis come to perceive Krishna's Prakat Lila, his manifest presence in a deeper, more substantial, ongoing manner within the realm of love and separation. And this same dynamic applies in the guru-disciple relationship in Vipralamba Seva. We have communion with our beloved Gurudev in a realm where darkness can never enter and even death has no access. So he is worshipped by Sankirtan. And the day of his appearance is invested with an unparalleled stock of spiritual blessings and devotional merit that will never recur in a day of Brahma. He appeared as the full moon was rising, only to be swallowed by Rahu, thinking, this moon does not deserve to stand in the presence of the golden moon who's appearing now, because this moon in the sky is defective with all its pot marks. And when he swallowed the moon under pretext of eclipse, the world was not thrown into darkness, but was illumined first by the chanting of the holy names by the Hindus bathing in the Ganges, which expanded in the chanting of the Muslims in imitation and jest, from which it expanded to every living entity joining in that kirtan. And when that kirtan became samyak, complete, full, nothing held back, then he who was addressed in the Maha Mantra appeared from the womb of Sachi, like the moon arising out of the ocean of her bhakti. And many wonderful pastimes ensued, but one, Advaitacharya, who had a long-standing reputation, if he ever bowed down to any idol that was not in truth a deity, it would shatter before him. When he came before Mother Sachi's newborn baby child and bowed down, she shuddered. Why are you, senior Vaishnav, topmost pundit, great Acharya, bowing down at the feet of my child as if he's some kind of deity? And then Nimai extended his little tiny lotus foot and put it on the head of Advaita. And then Mother Sachi saw that not only Advaita, but her baby became ecstatic. And everybody wondered, what kind of child is this? So, in the effulgence cast in the darkness of the eclipse, the first indications were revealed that life's ultimate goal would become unrestrictedly offered as the dawning of an age of unprecedented goodness was proclaimed by the event. And yet simply receiving a precious touchstone No, one more important event for the evening of Gaur Purnim. A little history of Kali given by Tavi Karnapur in his Chaitanya Chandradaya Nataka, which he was commissioned to compile by King Pratibhruta to relieve the devotees of their separation. Kali, he's actually Shaktavish avatar, but he serves Lord Gauranga by way of apparent opposition, found that when it was time to enter what was in name his age, but there was not the darkness he expected, but was an effulgence born of a Kastuba jewel worn by this child who was frolicking through the groves of Braja and somehow rose to become the king of Dwarka. And Kali cannot enter the universe as long as that effulgence would remain. And therefore, Krishna's Prakatalila extended, overlapped a little bit into what it would have been the beginning of Kali Yuga. But the Bhagavatam tells us that Kali could not take charge of his age until the instant that the husband of the goddess of fortune left. So he got a late start and was a little apprehensive due to that, that maybe this really isn't my age at all. And then what he witnessed with the eclipse on the evening of Gaur Purnim, he realized there is no place for me in this whole universe. So as he was vacating the universe, from behind he heard the prayers of demigods rising from their worship in Navadvip. Blessed is this holy eve of the advent of our Lord Gauranga, whose appearance day holds the crystallized essence of the love that kindles ecstatic devotion to Krishna. Hearing that, he was convinced, this is not my age. And he vacated for the duration of Chaitanya Lila. And then, cautiously, he entered the world again. And at this phase of Kali Yuga, when the luster of that golden age is becoming strong, it is simultaneously, on one hand, the best time in all history, simultaneously the most fearful. Because Kali, seeing that he is losing control, like a wolf who wants to attack a herd but cannot do so so long as the lion is present, when the lion, of whom Lord Gauranga is likened in so many ways, leaves, the wolf attacks with renewed vigor, knowing that he will only have a short period of time to wreak his dance of destruction, until the golden age just dispels darkness to the extent that Kali will again have no place to reside for that 10,000 year period. To call it a golden age within the Kali Yuga is inadequate, because the golden age of Satya Yuga, age of goodness, can't compare to the Shuddha Sattva of prema, which predominates, what do you call it, the prema yuga within the Kali Yuga, to last for 10,000 years. But at the beginning, this world, which is like a deep vat of sugarcane juice being heated by the fire, the scum coming to the top and dancing madly to be cast off and thrown away, anyone who does not immerse themselves in the golden essence below that deeper, beneath that scum, will be discarded. And this is a misfortune which has no comparison, because the opportunity will not come again for 8.64 billion years. So a question naturally arises, and Jiva Goswami questioned Lord Nityananda on this topic, who elaborated wonderfully, that how is it, in the very worst, most degraded of all dark ages, the process of devotion practiced by the gopis of Vrindavan is distributed to the common masses? This is such a paradox that requires some explanation. And there again, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami revealing the inner thoughts of Lord Sri Krishna. When a disease is especially deadly, an ordinary remedy will not suffice. Meaning that this Kali Yuga, the degradation excels any other, by Krishna's orchestration. So the Yuga Dharma, which is limited in only offering entrance into Vaikuntha, is not adequately effective to counteract the evils and perils of this particular age. And therefore the Lord, the most expert physician, concluded that the only remedy would be the utmost crystallized essence of prema. You can also look at it in terms of aparad, which means to be distanced from Radha. In the Kali Yuga, people are irreligious by nature. Even though they practice religious functions, it's like everything in this age, full of quarrel and hypocrisy. This age, repository of lies and falsity, covered with a thin veneer of truth, no one's inclined to practice religion sincerely. There's no worthy ingredients for sacrifice. The people are faithless by nature. And worst of all, they're very inclined to blaspheme saintly souls, which is the primary offense to the holy name, for which there is no shelter other than the holy name. But simply receiving such a transcendental touchstone does not imply that we will be gifted with the ability to appreciate it. And there is a natural tendency in this world that the greatest gifts readily and easily available we tend to take for granted. Every morning, according to a specific schedule, The sun rises and dispels darkness and generates warmth throughout the universe. And that it sets at the end of the day. Modern man is so impressed by his technological achievement and light shows and words that appear on the computer screen and grow and develop and dance and perform their drama before they transmute into something else. You see kids, even adults, they get enchanted watching. They don't even see how the sun is rising and setting every day and will do so for eternity. We marvel at the craftsmanship of expert sculpture. But all around us, little sparks of infinite consciousness are placed in the wombs of mothers, which grow and develop and reveal life and love and beauty and qualities. And then they also just disappear someday to go who knows where. We're not impressed by that because we see it all around us every day and we take it for granted. The supreme transcendental touchstone has gone the way of so many lesser treasures and blessings of this world because we see the holy name being chanted all around us and we assume that it must be generated by our own effort. We tend to take it for granted. And Lord Gauranga, foreseeing all these discrepancies, crying out in a tearful voice, praying to Lord Sri Krishna, Etadrashitava Kripa Bhagavan Mamapi Dadaiva Medishama Hajini Nadaragaha. Krishna, your mercy in bestowing the holy name upon this world is so causeless and unprecedented, which makes my misfortune so obvious because I have failed to develop any affection for it. Which leads into Trinada Pisunichana Dorora Pisahishnana. And ultimately, oh my Lord, you can embrace this servant who has fallen at your lotus feet, or neglect me, or trample me under your feet. You are a debauchee after all and can do whatever you like, but I am nonetheless forever your the servant of your servants. The whole range of spiritual perfection, from the beginning unfortunate plight of the conditioned soul to the highest love and separation of the gopis, is all contained in 8 verses as a synopsis upon which the 6 Goswamis expanded and acharyas ever since have continued to do. So how to appreciate that gift? Lord Gauranga was foreseeing all these deficiencies and made every arrangement to compensate. So, in a community like New Ramanreti, you're regularly hearing from pundits and philosophers and intellectuals, there's another perspective, which is the prerogative of the farmer. Because Lord Gauranga identified himself as a gardener. I have all these ambitions, but I'm not rich. All I have is some fruits and flowers. I'd like to become a tree because then I could be really magnanimous. But all I have is some fruits and flowers. Nobody is accepting my fruits and flowers, but I can't take them home. So I have to find some way that they'll be received. Now, it's very wonderful that within a tiny seed, or from a tiny seed, a mighty banyan tree can grow, producing so many more seeds. And Lord Garunga planted so many seeds in his manifest lila, which weren't really necessary for his Prakat pastimes, but were meant to prepare the world for the future eventuality of his appearance in this world. If you look at the past, the wonderful pastimes, like the deliverance of Jagai and Madhai, and then place it in perspective of the exodus of the whole universe, the individual deliverance of these fallen souls was not necessary in the context of the deliverance of the whole universe, which Haridas Thakur explained. Seeing Mahaprabhu feeling anguish, how will all the living entities be delivered? Haridas told him, they already have been, by the sound of your Sankirtan. And when that Sankirtan reaches the trees and the rabbits and those that don't even have ears or eyes or voice, but it sounds like there's an echo. It's not an echo. That's the kirtan of the non-moving living entities. All this, although inconceivable, is possible by your mercy. And Mahaprabhu is wondering, how has Haridas realized all this? I heard from Balabhadra Bhattacharya what happened as you traveled through Jarikanda. And, you know, the deer and the tiger were dancing and embracing and dancing while chanting Hare Krishna. And the trees were reaching down their branches to touch your lotus feet and bowing down, shedding tears of honey. And hearing that kirtan from the fauna and flora of Jarikanda forest, the uncivilized tribes within that region and around that region became so purified that they took up the mission of preaching and delivering others. And I also know that you accepted the prayer of your servant Vasudev Dutt, who desired that all living entities in the universe be delivered. And to facilitate that, he offered that the karma of everyone be placed upon his head. And that moved Lord Garunga to tears. And he said, if that's your desire, because of your purity, Krishna will see that it's fulfilled. But he won't place all the karma on your head. He will simply accept your intention and fulfill your desire and liberate the whole universe. But then Mahaprabhu said, well, what happens? How do the duties of the universe go on if everybody vacates? And he said, you simply awake subtle jivas and place them into the bodies of those who left, and all the material activities continue as unnoticed that there was any transition. And Mahaprabhu was wondering, how does Haridas realize all this? And he said, and Haridas, echoing the words of Brahma, who he is, one may say that he knows something about Lord Garunga's pastimes. Or what did he say in his previous role as Brahma? Empiric science may enable someone someday to count all the grains of sand and all the beaches of the world and all the stars in the sky, but they'll never reach the end of Lord Krishna's pastimes, which Ananta Shesh with his thousands of mouths is singing forever, but never reaches the end. So Haridas concluded, Some may say that they know something about Chaitanya Lila, but as far as I'm concerned, one drop of that ocean of mercy is so far beyond my comprehension, I cannot even so much as approach it. Whereas Lord Gauranga is thinking, how does he realize all of this? So, the original seed planted in this world from a desire tree in Goloka was Srila Madhavendra Puri, whose appearance day we celebrated 2 days ago. And Srila Prabhupada comments in the Brahma Madhva line, right up until the line of Lakshmipati Tirtha, there is not a trace of Madhurya Ras in the teachings or pastimes of any of the Acharyas. That was introduced in seed form, but not only Madhurya, the very essence of love and separation, which culminated in the expression of Madhavendra Puri's last words, which are not his words, words of Srimati Radharani coming to and through him as he left this world to return to Golok. O my Lord, most merciful Master, whose heart melts and flows as compassion for the fallen, when shall I see you again? Bereft of your darshan, my delirious heart is now bewildered. What shall I do now? Those words of Srimati Radharani articulate the anguish of all the Brijabasis when Uddhava left Braj for the second time when Krishna had sent him to Dwarka. Because Uddhava understood that the Brijabasis are on the verge of dying. If they die and Krishna hears of it, his lila is finished. He won't be able to finish what he's here to do. So what did he do? He brought them different gifts. The same message he brought from Mathura to Braj the first time, which he wasn't really equipped or prepared for the experience. What was the message? Meditate upon me, because I am all-pervading. So by the time that Uddhava came to Braj from Dwarka, he saw that they actually were meditating on him. They were perceiving his aprakata pastimes within their hearts. But nevertheless, Braj was devoid of life. The trees had shed all their leaves, and the cows were not grazing. There was no sound anywhere because everybody was wrapped in their meditation. Braj was like a wasteland. Uddhava breathed life back into the dham, which unfolded like a lotus in response to the Krishna Katha, which Uddhava brought. Tavakatam matam tapta jivanam. The life of the living entity. We become physically strong by eating good diet and exercise. We become and remain spiritually strong by hearing pastimes of Krishna. So, in his interactions with disciples of Madhavendra Puri, specifically with the Sanodiya Brahmana, the question came up. When the Vedas, Puranas, and great sages are not usually in agreement, how can you ascertain where is the essence of true religion to be found? In the heart of the pure devotee. In this case, Madhavendra Puri, whose behavior and instructions reveals the very essence of religion. there's another narration in the Bhagavat Mahatmya where Bhakti Devi is speaking to Narada Muni. Because Bhakti Devi had become old and nearly invalid, and her offspring, Gyanan Vairagya, were on the verge of death, and the sages were reciting different scriptures, but to no avail. They called Narada Muni, and when he recited Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhakti Devi resumed her innocent, beautiful, youthful form and danced joyfully in the realm of Vrindavan. And then she told her history. She said, I was born in Dravida Desh and then traveled to Karnataka and gradually up to Gujarat. By that time I was becoming old and debilitated. I longed to go home, but by the time I reached Vrindavan, I was just so decrepit. And Gyan and Vairagya, my sons, were on the verge of death. Hearing the Bhagavatam has restored our life. And then she told in more detail her story, expanding it into the future. She told every stop along her journey throughout every province of India, and she listed them by name. And she said, in the future, I will leave this land altogether and go to another country, series of countries, outside of Indian context. How was that fulfilled? In Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada participated in a writer's support group. These different Vaishnavas who were writing would come together to share their writings and inspire one another and encourage each other. When Srila Prabhupada was trying to get out of India to go to America, he was very cultured in asking blessings from Vaishnavas, but nobody wanted to give it for this particular purpose, which, you know, Sumati Maharaji expressed, how can I facilitate, you're going there to die. And like, no. Srila Prabhupada could be quite tricky at times. So when he had printed the first volumes of the Bhagavatam, he went to his support group and he put the three volumes on the table before everyone. He said, look, my life's mission is now fulfilled according to the instructions given at Radhakund by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, given many times. If you ever get money, print books. They're done. They need your blessings because these books are going to go to the West. So he handed them around and everybody placed their hand on the books and gave their blessings that they have a safe, successful journey to America. And everybody was happy. But Srila Prabhupada wasn't satisfied. He said, but these books need someone to carry them and present them and protect them and explain them. And I am the servant delegated with that purpose. So please bless me too. And at that point, what could they do? So, aboard Jaladuta, mid-Atlantic, writing in his diary, seasickness, vomiting, nausea, headaches, and then the two violent heart attacks, sensing that if there was a third, he would not survive. And And that night, in a dream, Lord Krishna came to him and revealed that all the avatars were united in carrying that ship across the ocean. And they just come along. And the next day he wrote, "Today, the ship is flying smoothly. I feel better and have appetite again." And I'm feeling so much separation from Vrindavan, from Radha Damodar, Radha Govinda, and Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. Feeling so much separation, so far away from home. But I have Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which I'm finding the nectar of Gauranga's Leela. And this is sustaining me as I continue on my Gurudev's mission. And then arriving Commonwealth Pier, interesting name for the pastime, Commonwealth Pier. And Srila Prabhupada wrote, "You have brought me here to speak because we wish that these souls be delivered. How will they understand? They're so immersed in the modes of passion and ignorance. How will they ever comprehend? How will they ever grasp the subtle, sublime, gentle culture of Praja? How is it possible? Only, my Lord Krishna, if you make my power of speech suitable and grant me the ability to repeat my Gurudev's message, only then can I possibly enter into the realm of their hearts. My Lord, I'm just a puppet in your hands. If you like, you can make me dance. So make me dance. Make me dance according to your desire. Only then will be revealed the purport of my name, Bhaktivedanta." Signed, the most unfortunate, insignificant beggar. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Planting the seed in a chapter which followed, struggling alone, crying in the wilderness. All his appeals to help from God brothers in Bharat in India, we cannot help you. Then along came an English professor, Hayagriva Prabhu. And feeling compassion for the plight of this elderly sadhu from Calcutta living in Bowery conditions, "Can I do anything to help you?" "That you're an English professor? Can you do some editing?" And Hayagriva said yes. He probably thought he needed some help writing a letter back to India. So Srila Prabhupada opened the trunk. Now, what was in that trunk? That was the fulfillment of Bhakti Devi's prediction that I will leave this land and go abroad. How did she go? It's told in the Bhagavat Mahatmya, which is often included with the Bhagavatam as an explanation. Bhakti Devi came in the Bhagavatam aboard an old, battered sea vessel, appropriately named Jaladuta, the messenger from the waters. So Srila Prabhupada opened the trunk And along with the Bhagavatam is all these stacks of manuscripts, you know, some handwritten, some typed, tied together with string. And you can start with these. All that awaited back in India was unpaid bills, beginning with the paper he used to print them on. What to speak of the printing? He hadn't even paid for them yet. Enshrined on the altar within the walls of that literary temple was the deity of bhakti, revealing herself through the Bhaktivedanta purports. And Srila Prabhupada even wrote in his diary, in his prayers to Lord Krishna, that, I'm so unworthy for this task. He said, I have no knowledge, I have no devotion, but he confessed, I do have implicit faith in the holy name of Krishna. And then he revealed his heart. So wonderful to behold. When the holy name of Krishna takes root in the heart, and from there, I'm paraphrasing, but this is the essence of what he was conveying, from there, activates the spiritual senses, because the holy name is self-manifested. We don't produce it by our chanting or musical abilities. It's self-manifesting, meaning that Krishna takes birth in the heart and he activates your spiritual senses. That's why Rupa Goswami prays, we have millions of years, millions of tongues, to reverberate the sound vibration resounding in the heart. And when that holy name spreads across the landscape to rise up from every town and village, every forest and river and stream and valley, then only is the true Vaishnava's desire fulfilled. So, what are some of the seeds that Lord Gauranga planted? We only have a few minutes. Offer some synopsis. He planted a seed in the heart of Gopal Chapala, who committed offense to Narada Muni in the form of Srivas Thakur. And when he prayed to Mahaprabhu for forgiveness from the leprosy that followed, Mahaprabhu said, I leave you to suffer this leprosy nearly forever. And he fell down just hopeless. When he came back, and Gopal Chapala prayed, my Lord, I simply want to serve your servants. And the leprosy was dispelled. That was a seed to grow into the future eventuality, which developed and followed Mahaprabhu's Prakatalila. That so many offenders can be freed from the offense to the holy name when they develop the sincere desire to serve the servants of the servants of the Lord, which more than anything attracts his causeless mercy, which is the only qualification to understand his pastimes and to chant his holy name with proper devotion and taste. He delivered intellectuals like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Prakasananda Sarasvati, as a seed to give hope and appreciation that the holy name can dissolve the egotism that normally accompanies scholasticism and is such an impediment to spiritual growth, that even in the hearts of such intellectuals, by the potency of the holy name, they will submit their lives to the goddess of devotion. Such a metamorphosis in the heart of Prakasananda Saraswati, leader of the impersonalists, that in Western lands filled with impersonalism and voidism, even though we proclaim devotion to Krishna, we teach one another, we treat one another with impersonal residual effects of our previous conditioning. That dissolves by the seed planted in the pastime of delivering Prakasananda Saraswati and his followers. He planted a seed in the heart of Haridas Thakur, who was born in a Muslim family and therefore deemed untouchable by Hindu culture. That was a seed to proclaim the future eventuality that hordes of truly untouchables could join together on the common platform of the sacrificial arena of the holy name, and in chanting together evoke the Lord's mercy, which purifies the heart and makes those untouchable outcasts on a level which is worshipable even by Brahma. And that's why Srimad Bhagavatam explains. Of course, it's interesting how it explains it, because when Shukadeva Goswami explains to Maharaj Parikshit the symptoms of Kali Yuga, you know, he says basically the same thing in the 12th canto that Karabhajna Muni says to King Nimi in the 11th canto regarding the symptoms of the age. But they each give an opposite conclusion. Shukadeva Goswami keeps repeating, Kali Yuga is the worst age, because hardly anyone will chant the holy names of Krishna. And after listing the exact same symptoms, Karabhajna Muni says to King Nimi, Kali Yuga is the best age because everyone will chant Hare Krishna. What is the reason for this apparent contradiction? Contradictions invite deeper investigation. Shukadeva Goswami is explaining to Maharaj Parikshit the characteristics of the usual Kali Yuga. Karabhajna Muni is explaining to King Nimi the characteristics of the exceptional Kali Yuga. When the Lord comes to relish some particular flavor of his own love, he spreads some fabulous good fortune upon the surface of the earth that anyone who becomes his follower, even those who did not follow him, who opposed him, who obstructed him, who retaliated against him and conspired to abuse him, they all automatically attained the destination of Vaikuntha, which is always very difficult to achieve. What to speak of those who appreciated him, who served him, who developed affection for his servants? Ultimately, those who chanted the holy name became thereby eligible for the utmost essence of prema. Inconceivable and unknowable outside, because as Prabodhananda Saraswati explains, the direction to prema, not in the spirit of majestic devotion to Vaikuntha, but only known to the Brijavasis, the direction to that prema, the wonders of the holy name in bestowing that prema that previously no one had ever known. and service to the utmost, highest peak on the whole range of spiritual perfection, Srimati Radharani, who no one ever understood before. All these things and so much more Mahaprabhu has bestowed in the chanting of the holy name, because he is the essence and source of that ocean of mercy undulating the world with love and inspiring Srila Prabhupada in his mission of extending that mercy. And his godbrothers would often argue, Pritivityachayata Nagaradigram Sarvapitcharama Harima, means it'll spread, the holy name will spread to every town and village in India. India, that's a world. Mahaprabhu didn't mean it would spread outside. And Srila Prabhupada would cite that reference of Bhakti Devi, saying, I will leave this land. And she told every province within India to confirm, I've already been there. I will leave this land altogether and go outside of Indian context. That prophecy was fulfilled in Srila Prabhupada's coming. He planted the seed in the Western world and left it for us to cultivate. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? What's that?
Technology.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We have to be very cautious about, not hearing offenses or making offense to Vaishnavas, because that will destroy our culture. So,
even I don't know how to put this word. Lord Chaitanya says that whoever preaches his glories is empowered by him. I mean, anybody that is not empowered by Lord Chaitanya cannot give prema bhakti all over. And still we see that there is, the disciples of Srila Prabhupada spreading the holy name to thousands of hundreds of thousands of conditioned souls, even millions right now. But still, there is, people that somehow or another, they don't have the vision or their preaching efforts. And sometimes we have to, by the world of where we live, it's a technology, we have to sometimes hear, people undermining the preaching activities of these pure devotees who are giving out the holy name around the world. How can we do, to avoid such a thing?
We can do what Lord Chaitanya explained to the offenders. You've used your tongue to criticize devotees, which is the essence of poison that will kill you. That condition can only be redeemed by the essence of life, which is praising and glorifying the devotees. You can't just stop from criticizing in the age of Kali, because everything facilitates that. You can't have a field with no weeds. Weeds will grow. The only way to have a field with no weeds is to make a crop that's so healthy that the weeds are crowded out. So it's not that we can just stop criticizing in the age of Kali unless you're a pure devotee. The influence is all-pervading, but the weeds will not grow if the crop is strong, meaning the appreciation and glorification of the devotees will just crowd out that potential for the weeds to grow. So technology is helpful in spreading the holy name to every town and village, but it did not come about for such divine purposes. I mean, ultimately it did, by Krishna's arrangement. But you know, we here in the technological age, the glories of technology raised on such high pedestal and sung with such appreciation, which tends to snub and deride metaphysical truths like karma and destiny. And yet every day events occur that go totally against the wishes of man. We call it a trick of fate, by which indirectly the victory of fate is proclaimed. It's wonderful that in the scriptures of the world, at least ISKCON devotees, you don't hear much about other yuga avatars or other avatars at all, because, you know, Prabodhananda Saraswati said, what is the need for guna avatars for creation, maintenance, destruction? Leela avatars for pastimes and manvantara avatars because they're all contained and surpassed in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So devotees, you know, they seem enthusiastic that they're just so inspired by the pastimes of Lord Gauranga and his servants. And you don't hear much about other avatars. It's not that we deride. It's like, you know, when something phenomenal happens in the world and that becomes front page news, everything else is relegated to the back pages or some future editions. When Mahaprabhu appeared, so much went to the back pages or on hold for future editions, because he has given us the nectar which will cure us of that envy which prompts criticism, and that is the praise of the devotee, expressing appreciation of the devotee, which attracts the Lord's most causeless mercy that completely eradicates and transforms that hideous conditioning, as it did with Kaliya. Kaliya's prayers to Krishna. You know, as a snake, I'm by nature so prone to spout venom, which means criticizing. Your dancing upon my hoods has completely created a transubstantiation of my hideous nature into something divine. So, what part of the human body is most like the serpent? It's the tongue. But that's where Krishna danced on Kaliya, to inspire us. Keep Krishna dancing forever upon your tongue, and that will transubstantiate that base nature, which likes prone to criticize, into something that can't help but express appreciation for the wonder of devotee association. And with that crop pervading the field, the weeds will have no nourishment to grow. I think our time is up. Thank you so much. Due to a shortage.